thank you so much for joining Hashtag No Limits today. We are having some technical difficulties. I appreciate anyone who has been waiting for us for the last few minutes. I really wanted to get Hugh on today. He's an extremely busy man, and I was so honored that I had a break. Somebody had to cancel on me kind of last minute, and so I asked him if he could pop in today, and he has done that. And so he's so busy, and he's on such a time constraint that I'm going to give a shortened version of my normal introduction and then just jump right into him. So this is Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Hugh is a fabulous example of this. I was told about him through my brother, and I will let Hugh tell you how that came to be, that he knew my brother and why that was. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them in the chat. I will pop them up on the screen so Hugh can see them. If you have a question, that he'll be able to answer that for you. If you are watching live, give us a hashtag live and where you're from. If you're watching replay, do the same thing, but hashtag replay. All right, Hugh, I'm hoping that you're not frozen. I'm hoping and praying that the internet connection is good. Tell us about yourself. Tell us your story.
Hi, well, my name is Hugh Rogers. I was born in Chicago, Illinois. I have five siblings on my mom's side. On my dad's side, I had six siblings. I'm the baby of the babies.
Wow.
My dad died when I was 3 months, so I never got a chance to know him. I was raised by my mom, a single parent, in the inner city in Chicago. Had a very bad speech impediment, couldn't string together a sentence. So I had special classes early on in my education, just to learn how to basically say good morning or good day. Very tough. I'm a lover of words because of that. That was a journey within itself, because I went to parochial schools. Let me just state that in my early years. And I hated going to the board. I hated having to read all of those things because I had a stutter that was so bad. It was just so embarrassing. And so over the years, just using the different techniques that I learned to be able to speak and to be able to speak well, taking every opportunity that I could to read. Because like I said, I love words, because I learned that words are powerful. Words are, that's my power, my words. So I became that person who was afraid to go to the board, who was afraid to speak. I transformed from that person to the person where my friends would be, hey, won't you ask, because you know what to say, you know, or can you tell them this for me, because you know what to say. And so I began I became that person, if you will, to ask my friends' parents if we could go here, if we could do this, if someone could spend a night, because they said that I had a way with words. You know, but it's, of course, it's because I'm a reader. So and from there, I became just that person, always just being put out front to speak. And so currently I don't have a problem speaking. I love to speak. I love speaking in front of crowds. I believe I have a message to give, you know, and that message is simple, is that you can, is that you matter, is that you are important, whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever state you're in. And so that's really it far as my speech impediment, because it seemed to go away. I think at some point I discovered that I didn't stutter when I sing.
And like so Mel Tillis. Do you know the country singer Mel Tillis?
No, I don't.
He had a terrible, terrible stutter, except when he sang, and then he sang beautifully.
Yeah, so I noticed that. And so what that said to me, that said that I would do better to speak on a rhythm. Mm. So there's a rhythm to my speech pattern. And if I ever get off that rhythm, then you hear that stutter, it'll raise his ugly head up. You know, so I have to get back on that get back on my rhythm and I can go. Well, my mom raised me. I'm the youngest. I'm the baby of the babies. And so I went through middle school in Catholic school, and I ended up getting kicked out of school for getting in trouble because I was never the person of the streets. I was always raised in the word, so I have a strong faith background. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to hang out. And so I began getting in trouble, and I ended up getting kicked out of Catholic school. And my mom says, okay, so you want to hang out there, so I'll put you in public school. Let's see how you do, so to speak. Right. Mm-hmm. So I did that. I went to high school. In high school, I continued trying to hang out, but I had to be at Bible study. I had to be in church on Sunday. So I was that kid. So friends would call me preacher. And so I graduated high school, and I didn't want to go to college. I knew that I had what it took to go to college, but I had had my first child 3 days prior to graduation. And I had a girlfriend, as the story goes. And so I didn't want to go away, didn't go away. And I just tumbled into trouble, and it just spiraled down with everything that I had been taught in school, everything that I had been taught in the home. None of that was enough to keep me from the trouble that the streets had for me. And so I hooked up with the wrong crowd, and I ended up dealing drugs, and I was arrested, and I was convicted of a drug conspiracy, and I was sentenced to 20 years in prison.
Wow.
And so during my time away, I took every program that they had. Every program that was offered, I just threw myself in it, and I just went full force, because my thinking was that I would make me better. I would make me better. I would get all the knowledge that I could, any program that I could get, what I can get something from. So I took communication courses. I took theology. I took cabinet making. And that's where I met this guy. He was a correction officer. And he changed my life a lot. You know, he used to talk to me all the time. We talk, and he was just a cool guy. He was just a real cool dude. I mean, you know, and so we would talk, and we would discuss things that were going on in the world, you know, white versus black, you know, law versus, you know, the citizen crimes and different things like that. And he was always just even keel. I mean, you know, hey, listen, this is life, you know, and what you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. You know, so he began to give me different skills that I would later use, just ways to look at things. And so he taught me how to build cabinets. But it was so much more than just building cabinets. You know, it's like he was teaching me how to build a better me. Mm. You know, so our relationship was one that where in joking, you know, joking in passing, I call him dad. I'd be like, hey, dad, he called me son, you know. And so, of course, you know, in prison, you know, the guy's looking like, man, what's wrong with you? You know, this white guy, you know, so you know, and you this black guy, you know, so but when I say that he's a genuine person, a real good person, you know, and I needed that, you know, he wasn't the only person in my life to sow into my life, you know, but during that time, I was able to recognize it. I was able to utilize it. I was able to accept it, because prior to this, you know, I'm in the streets and I'm going about my way. And so I didn't have the time or the energy to listen. You know, there's an old saying, when a student is ready, the teacher will appear. I believe it's an ancient proverb of some sort. And that was just the truth for me at that time. And so I continued with the cabinet making course, graduated from that, and he hired me. He hired me on as a teacher's aide. So now I'm interacting with him on a day-to-day daily, because now he's my boss. Mm-hmm. So we'd sit and we'd talk, and we may play word games or cards or something, because he was always teaching in everything that he was doing. He was always teaching, and I was always getting some out of it. And so that continued until I transferred from that institution and went on to the next institution. And I mean, I would have to say that he changed my life at that point. And I was able to glean from everything else that I had in my reserves. Because I believe that my mom, she was the wisest woman that I've ever met. I'm telling you, sayings that she's had. She's had sayings for me since I was a little boy. Mm-hmm. You know, son, go where you celebrate it, not where you tolerate it. The best thing you could do for a fool is not be one of them. You know, sayings like that, you know. And so I began to incorporate all of these things. And so so they just came out naturally, and I would just use them. And so I was released December 18th, 2018. And I got a job like the next 2 weeks, and I began working. But I always wanted to give back. I always wanted to do what that correctional officer did for me. So my way of doing that was I began speaking. So anywhere they would let me speak, I come speak, just let me speak to the kids. Let me tell my story, because, you know, most times when someone goes through incarceration and they return home, that's a stain.
Right.
You know, and so that's something that they want to keep hidden. And that's how I felt initially. But now it's my power, because I can say that I've been there, and right. This is me hitting the reset button. This is what it looks like, me hitting the reset button. So now I mentor distressed veterans, young men, women. I work with the homeless every day. I love what I do. I work for a wonderful organization, Southern Illinois Healthcare Foundation. My work site is here at St. Vincent de Paul, which is another wonderful, wonderful organization. We help so many people. We do so much. We don't just provide meals and shelter and clothing. We help with light bills. We help with rental assistance. We help find places for people to go. Be it if they're in need of psychiatric services, or if they just need a primary care physician, if they just need to be able to have a safe space to be, we provide all of that. And so I'm in an area where the population is very transient. It's a very impoverished area. So There's no end to the needs that are here, right. You know, and the stories that you come across, the cases that you have to deal with. You know, like I said, I love what I do. I began working here because I was asked to come and to speak to the population, to try to motivate the population, and just to give them encouragement, just to let them know in their darkest time that God does exist and that they can. Amen. And so I came in for that, and I ended up meeting the director here, Patricia Hogebree, and she offered me a job At the time, I had a handyman business, and I was just tending to the senior citizens in this community. So I wasn't making a lot of money, you know, just trying to help any way that I can. And so she took me in, and she began to teach me, and she began to show me the ins and outs of social work. And that's what I do today, you know. That's, I guess that about sums it up. I didn't mention that I have a grandson who I brought down to live with me so that I can give his mom a hand. He's 14 years old. And because I remember at that age, that's when I wanted to, you know, kind of break loose. I started cutting loose, you know, so just to help her get a handle on him, I did that. And that's my life now. Just giving back.
That's so wonderful. And I know that you're on a big time constraint. And so I do want to ask you a few questions, if that's okay. So I know the recidivism rate of someone who's been incarcerated is really high. I mean, like, what is it, 70-80% or higher? And you haven't. You're that good statistic that has not gone back, from my understanding of what you just shared and what has been shared with me by my brother. Do you attribute a lot of that to the fact that you were able to learn a lot of different skills while you were incarcerated, as well as having that correctional officer be with you and teach you how to be a better you? Or do you have other reasons why you might attribute that not going back?
Well, those are two reasons, two great reasons. You know, I lost my mom while I was away.
Oh.
And so that hurt. I had a great responsibility. I have a great responsibility because I have a responsibility to be the man that my mom raised me to be the man that God created me to be. You know, so I have that responsibility. That goes hand in hand with what I learned, because oftentimes guys recidivate because they don't have any skills. They don't have any tools in their toolbox.
Right.
You know, they go in and they go in with nothing, and they come out with nothing. And oftentimes it's not because no programs weren't being offered. Programs are offered, mm-hmm. but they have to break through. They have to break through that fog, I guess, if you will.
Sure.
You know, that fog of what's cool, what's not, what's macho, what's not, because in the fall, you can't see what your priorities are or should be.
Right.
You know, and so that CO, he helped me to identify what my priorities should be. And it gave me a chance to take a step back and to look at my other counterparts, my other peers there on the compound, and to see how they were moving.
Mm-hmm.
And how things were turning out for them. And it allowed me to be able to play the tape out so that I could see, okay, this is the end result. Is this what I want? You know, or, you know, do I want to go this way, this route here? And so I would have to say, yeah, that definitely played a big part, because now, as I stated, you know, I came out and I started a handyman business.
Mm-hmm.
These were the skills that I learned in cabinet making.
Right.
You know, so I was able to take that as a foundation and build upon that. You know, I used to call my old correctional officer, and I would ask him different things. Hey, what do you think about this? How did you do this? You know, of course, I drilled him before parting with him, just to know the different, the various tools and the different styles of using them, the correct way versus the incorrect way, and things of that nature. And so, like I said, yeah, I would have to say that he was very instrumental. What I learned, very instrumental. Me losing my mom, the fact that I have a great responsibility, the fact that I need to show what it looks like. I need to show that, hey, you can do this. You know, I think all of those working together, in conjunction with the fact that no one wants to go to jail, no one wants to be in prison. You know, I think all of that, that's what helped me, you know, but it takes the right mindset. I think it definitely takes the right mindset. You know, you have to be ready, you know, or you have to get yourself ready.
Yeah. So, L.A. Jansen says, congratulations on the man you are today. Speaking as a mom, I know yours would be very proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And yeah, I mean, as I said, knowing what I know about your story, I 100% believe that your mom would be very proud of you, and your dad too. The fact that you lost him when you were 3 months old has to be a very tough thing to go through childhood, knowing that, you know, you're missing out on a lot of things that you're seeing other kids maybe getting to do with their dads. And I'm really happy that correctional officer was there for you, and that the prison system offered you the opportunities to learn as much as you learned, and that you came out of that fog at some point early enough that you knew you needed to get all of those skills, and you needed to learn how to be, as you said it earlier, of the best version of you that is possible. And that's a lot of what hashtag No Limits about is, that we as society will, and we do it to ourselves as well, place limits upon someone's potential based on how they are at a certain age, or how they are, you know, like yourself, for example, being incarcerated. I mean, there are, unfortunately, you know, lots of workers in the prison systems, the jail systems, that don't see the person as a person first. They see them as whatever it is that got them to that place. And to me, what you're saying is that this correctional officer saw you as a person and saw that you had potential, and that he wanted to help bring that out of you as much as you wanted to get it out.
Definitely. I mean, you know, because so many times, you know, you find yourself with a chip on your shoulder, you know, for some reason or another. You know, you got a chip on your shoulder, and I'm not saying that it's not rightly there, or that you don't feel the way you feel is not valid. I'm not saying that. You know, for me, when I was 17 years old, I was on my way home from school, and there was a guy that I knew from the neighborhood, older guy. And, you know, when you're young like that, you're impressionable. Mm-hmm. And so you often want to, you know, hang out with the older guys when you can, some, you know. But I'm on my way home from school anyway, and he says, hey, there's a car going to pull up. When a car pull up, give them these two bags, and then we're going to head up by the store. So I'm going up, I'm going to hang. You know, my mind is saying, okay, well, I may get a drink or something, you know. And so I do that, and we walk to the corner, and a detective car pulls up, and three detectives jump out, and they put me in the car. Because the guy who I gave the bags to, he was an undercover narc. Okay, so that began everything then. So I didn't want my mom to know that I got in trouble. So I took probation for it. I had 30 months probation, ended up getting in trouble during the time that I was on probation because I have to turn this phone off. I apologize.
That's okay. As I said at the beginning, you're a very busy man wearing lots of hats.
So I didn't want my mom to know. And I ended up getting in trouble during the course of my probation and ended up getting violated, but I ended up finishing it later. And so 11 years later, when I am actually out and I'm doing and I'm in the streets and I am selling drugs, I was arrested by the FBI. And they used, when I had gotten in trouble at 17 years old, to enhance my the sentence I was facing from 10 years to 20 years, mandatory minimum. Now, it's a statute that was created for like drug kingpins, but they stated that I was a professional drug trafficker. Okay. Because I had sold I passed two bags at 17 years old, and now here at 28 years old, now I'm doing it again. So like maybe I must have been doing this continuously, undetected, and so therefore I don't know how they came to the conclusion, but they did that, and that put a chip on my shoulder, you know, and so. And I felt like I was targeted, treated unfairly, you know, and so just me meeting this correction officer and me engaging with them from day to day, you know, that, you know, I was able to get beyond that and to see that irregardless to what was done to me, the impact that I was having on my community by my actions. You know, and it taught me that unless you're part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And either way you look at it, you're setting an example. You're putting something on display. So you are mentoring. Are you mentoring something good or are you mentoring something bad?
Right.
And so he just helped me put that into perspective. And so that's why it's so important today for me to give back. It's so important for me to show the right way.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to talk to you because I know you got to go. But you're an author.
Yes.
So do you want to talk a little bit about, you have two books out, is that correct? Or do you have three out now?
Two.
Okay. You want to talk about each of those a little bit?
Yes. The first book was Wooden Nickels. And it's a story based in Chicago. It's about a guy much like myself who was raised in a good home, faith-based home, raised in the church. And he goes out into the streets and he ends up getting in trouble. He ends up learning that all that glitters isn't gold. He learns that his mom, she's truly the only girl that was in his corner, and that his friends really weren't his friends. I wrote this story because I wanted to show guys what it looks like. I wanted to give those who were maybe considering going into the streets an opportunity to view it from a different position so that they can see. Because oftentimes, if you're in the frame, you can't see the picture. You have to step out of the frame and take a look back, and then you can see what the picture looks like. You know, 2020, hindsight, I'm sorry, is always 2020. So I wanted to provide that for them to maybe deter them from getting into the game. Those who are, I wanted them to know the pitfalls that could possibly lie ahead And so and I wrote that book in Ebonics because that's the street language, you know, in the urban areas, you know. And so we often speak Ebonics. We may say tho or do or they or, you know, instead of the correct terminology. But when you read it, it's so different to hear yourself read it, you know. So I wrote that like that. It was a fun write. You know, I had a lot of fun with it. My second book is No Love City. And it, again, is based in Chicago, but it spans from Chicago all the way over to Panama. And it's a story of four guys, went to grade school together, graduated, went to high school. Three of them drops out of high school. One has that mom that was like my mom. She was that, you know, as for me and my household, we're going to serve the Lord. She was that mom. And so she fought to keep him away from them. And so he turns out good. They go the route that they go and they fall into all type of trouble. And because now they're robbing people and they're doing carjackings and things of that nature. They're into drugs. And well, they robbed the wrong person and they start a war. And when they start this war up, this war is with the wrong people. It spans all the way over to Colombia. And it spills over there, and now you have the Colombians coming, you know, and it's just a lot of war, a lot of fighting in the city of Chicago. But it's a great read. It has a cast of 11 characters and they all intersect at some point, and it's different stories, you know. And so I really love that book there. I even pull it out and read it from time to time.
As a fellow author, it would be difficult, I think, to maintain 11 characters, stories, and you know, kind of keeping it all together and making it make sense. So you said that Wooden Nickels is written in Ebonics. What about No Love City? Is that, how is that?
No, actually, No Love City is written straightforward. I do some narration in it. Some's in the third person, you know, first person, you know, because I have so many characters. So, you and I, we're having a conversation and you're saying what you're saying, I'm saying what I'm saying, but then I may go back and I may break it down and just do a brief narration, you know, just to explain something, a statement that you may have said, what you meant, or what you were referring to, like that.
Yeah. Well, and I haven't gotten your books, but I do know that Wooden Nickels, for myself, would be very difficult for me to read it and understand it. But I wasn't your target audience when you was writing it. So it's okay that I don't understand it. Or that it would be more difficult for me to read, I should say it that way. So I'm going to pull up your website really quick just because I want people to see it. And it is, I'm going to give the address here. It is hughaRogers.com. So that's hughaRogers.com. Just if you want to get the books, that you can go here to his website. Are they for sale elsewhere or only here on your website?
They're also on, they're on Amazon. They're on Walmart.com also.
Okay.
There are a number of places that they are. They're on BarnesandNoble.com. Actually, No Love City is. Wooden Nickels is on Amazon. So you'd have to get Wooden Nickels through me or Amazon.com. Okay. Yeah.
Perfect. And if they wanted to contact you to come and speak, so they, again, they just go to your website and go to contacts, or is there a different spot on your website they should go to?
Booking. There's booking. A spot on my website that's booking.
Okay.
And they can leave an email there.
Okay.
I recently just spoke also. I'm sorry. I recently spoke at the prison that I, where I was, Greenville. Yeah, I recently spoke at their graduation. I was the keynote speaker there July 19th of this year. And now I'm going back and forth there so I can help with their reentry program.
Oh, that's amazing.
Just to get guys ready to return to society.
And that correctional officer is no longer there.
No, he's no longer there.
Yeah. So for anybody who hasn't figured it out, that correctional officer is my brother. That's the connection that I have to Hugh. And and he has spoken very, very highly of you. And he is so proud of you. And just hearing his stories about you and the successes that you have had and the, you know, I mean, he has his version of the journey that you and he have had together, of course. And it's a beautiful story. And I'm so thankful to have had this opportunity today to hear your version of that journey. Obviously, as my big brother, I already have great admiration for him, but hearing your version of that story just adds to my love and appreciation and admiration of him. So thank you very much for being here today and sharing that. Is there anything else? I know you have to go, but I don't want you to leave off here without saying whatever you thought you wanted to say today, if you haven't already said it.
Well, I just want to say that you can. I don't know what struggle someone may be going through, because everybody's journey isn't the same.
Right.
Everybody's journey is not the same. But I just want to just take this time just to encourage that you can, that you matter, that God does love you, and that God, he gives you the training, he gives you the experience that you need for the journey that's ahead of you.
Amen. Absolutely. Well, Hugh, it's truly been my honor. I so appreciate you being here today. And I want anybody who's watching to understand that, you know, he's had a lot of limits placed on him. He had a bad stutter when he was younger. He's been in prison. He's, you know, and he has busted through all of those limits, and he's doing amazing things. I mean, you tend not to think of somebody with a big stutter when they're young becoming a motivational speaker when they're an adult. You honestly tend not to think of someone who's incarcerated being a motivational speaker, a published author, having his own business, working in a company like St. Vincent de Paul, and doing all the great things that you're doing. And I just want to encourage everyone, just as he did, hashtag no limits. You can. God's got you. And I, after that, there's nothing else to say, right? God's got you.
God's got you.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. Make sure you go to Hugh's website, or you go pick up his book on Amazon. If you want to reach out to him, go to his website again. That was Hugh, H-U-G-H-A, Rogers.com. And I will see you all next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.